Welcome to the Information Security Forum podcast. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. And today, as always, we are hearing conversation with Steve Durbin, Managing Director of ISF, and Sharina Edwards, partner at Quarles and Brady LLP. Sharina is an energy professional with solid regulatory experience, especially in public policy at the state level in Illinois. She focuses her practice on electric reliability, water, natural gas, and critical infrastructure issues. We recorded this episode from home recording setups during the coronavirus shutdown. Sharina in Chicago, Steve outside of London, and I in my home studio in Brooklyn, New York. In this conversation, Steve and Sharina discuss the pressure on infrastructure due to the massive shift to working from home, the resulting cybersecurity concerns, and how regulatory challenges are evolving even by the hour.
Sharina, hi. You're an energy professional with a pretty solid regulatory experience that includes everything from analyzing, formulating right the way through to implementing indeed public policy, not just at the Illinois state level, but also at the federal level. And so you've got a wealth of knowledge on issues affecting energy, public utilities, cybersecurity, of course, reliability, and supplier and workforce diversity. Now, there's a huge amount in there, clearly, that I'd like us to explore and unpick. But just to start, what is your take on the COVID-19 situation at the moment with regard to infrastructure and reliability, for instance, because we haven't really seen too much being talked about in that space? Is the infrastructure going to hold up?
Well, I think that's always a good question. And I think that, you know, with a global pandemic, obviously, that's just, you know, more pressure. But I think from an infrastructure perspective, yes, I think it will hold up. You know, I think there's two different concerns here, right? There's an infrastructure issue, period, regardless of the pandemic. And then, of course, there is the additional pressure and increased precautions needed to address this current crisis that we're in. You know, it's interesting because, you know, we had discussed doing this particular meeting in person, and I was very much so looking forward to that. But obviously, we're now doing this from, I'm doing this from my, I call it my she shed, my little area of the house where I do my work. And it's interesting that over the last 3 weeks, we have seen mass changes, and we've seen a literal shift from people who have constantly and always worked in an office and an inundation of people having to pivot and work from home. And so increased precautions to slow the spread of COVID-19 have certainly forced unprecedented reliance on technology and obviously remote connectivity to a point that people, we've just never had this much remote working, I think, ever, probably in the history of technology. So you have this rapid and significant shift. And then what that does is it raises enhanced privacy and cybersecurity concerns, certainly, and also creates special concerns in the highly vulnerable space, such as the electric and gas infrastructure systems. And so I think what's most concerning is that everything about this pandemic, about COVID-19, is so fluid and evolving, and things, you can't even say that they change day to day, really. They're changing minute to minute, which ultimately means that there's not much time to plan and to prepare. And so with one of the biggest issues and vulnerable points of a cyber attack is it tends to be culture. And really, it's people, you know, not being aware of their surroundings, not being aware of things. So you have people in a different environment, right, in their home environment, as opposed to work, where maybe you'll get an email. And maybe when you're in your work environment, you're more cognizant of, maybe I shouldn't click on that, maybe I shouldn't open that document, but you're at home. So just things are a little different. And you're not necessarily practicing as good cyber hygiene as you normally would. So, of course, there's an extreme vulnerability just because of everybody being remote, or so many people being remote, rather. But generally, I think that, you know, there's a good solid infrastructure, but certainly one that can easily be penetrated. And there's work every single day, every single minute of the day by a multitude of regulatory authorities to make sure that the infrastructure is not easily penetrated. But you'll figure out through this conversation that, you know, the electric grid is really something that most US utilities will tell you that they receive penetration. They receive a hacker trying to get into the system almost every single day. And it's nothing that's surprising. It's whether or not they're actually able to successfully get in and do any damage. So the infrastructure, I think, is in a good place. A lot of work that goes into making sure that that's the case. But certainly, we're in a very vulnerable position right now because of what we are all experiencing due to this global crisis.
Yeah, I don't know whether you saw, but back in February, Time magazine called the situation the world's largest work from home experiment. Because it really is that, isn't it? We are, to build on your point, really making up some of these things as we go along. And certainly as I talk to chief information security officers, business continuity professionals, the fact that this is a global pandemic that is affecting multiple countries has really changed things up significantly, because a lot of the continuity plans that they had, of course, put in place had made some assumptions that this sort of thing might be localized, so therefore you might be able to move operations to a different geography, whether that be within the same country or another one. And yet none of those things really apply. And that certainly has raised, I think, a number of issues for organizations and indeed for critical national infrastructure players as well, because, of course, they have to keep providing the service, as you've just pointed out. So in that sort of environment, what do you think some of the biggest security challenges are over the next, 2 to 3 months, for as long as we remain in this sort of lockdown situation? You've mentioned some, but what are the greatest ones that we should be watching out for?
Well, I think certainly one of the biggest things is that, we all know this, the electric grid delivers the electricity that is essential for modern life. And obviously, as a result, the reliability of the grid and its ability to meet consumers' demand has always been of long-standing national interest. And there's a lot, like I said, of work and infrastructure support that goes into that, because it is such a vulnerable point. The grid's reliability, that reliability that consumers really demand and need to function daily to ensure that they're continuing to get electricity and power, it can be impaired by cyber attacks on two different systems. And there's, an IT system and OT system that support those operations. But I think one of the biggest things is that what we've seen over the last probably, I would say almost a decade, 5 to 10 years, certainly, we have seen a shift in the way that electricity is generated, right? So you've seen a rapid replacement of traditional generation with renewables now, like solar and wind. And when you think about those changes in distributed generation and that type of thing, that really is combined with asset digitalization. And that's a wonderful thing. I mean, there are a lot of positive things that come with smart meters and allowing customers to have choice. And particularly even during a time like this, where you can literally set your devices to say, this is when I'm home, heat my home during this time, this is when I'm at work. But now everyone is at home, right? So these digitalization assets have been wonderful, and it's great to have those types of options. But it also certainly does position itself for disproportionate risk and even more vulnerability, because of the fact that, when you think of digitalization, well, what you have technology and power and energy. It's the core. It is the epicenter of everything that we do. And nothing in our modern society can function without access to power. And all of those people who want that power, they know that. They know that we rely on our power, our electricity, our energy to go about everyday, U.S. life, everyday American life. And so this is why it's such an urgent matter of national concern. And because of all of this technology that has now been put into place as a result of this shift to renewables and this shift to, this great digitalization, it allows an opportunity, a window for certainly more cyber attacks. And these are the type of attacks that could result in widespread loss of electrical services, which include, long duration, large scale blackouts. So imagine right now when you're thinking about this type of crisis that we're in, and all you're hearing about is the, shortage of PPE equipment and the shortage of ventilators. Now imagine adding something like a large scale blackout on top of that. It would be devastating. All of these people who are in these hospitals who are relying on that power to, get oxygen. That would be catastrophic. And so you can best believe that there is some hacker somewhere, or hacktivist is the term, is coined. There is someone somewhere trying to figure that out, every minute of every day of this pandemic, and just trying to see, hey, can I get in? But certainly that is where the vulnerability is. And that's kind of, I think the concern that would be. It's almost like a perfect storm, right? You have people are not where they normally are. So culture has shifted. And I said, that's the biggest usually issue when it comes to cyber attacks, is that culture, people are not aware of their surroundings. They're not making the right decisions, using the best judgment. And then you have the fact that people are working from home. They're relying on technology. And then you have the fact, of course, on top of all of that, that really most of the grid is now digitalized. So the opportunity is really just there. So it is certainly, I think, something that a lot of eyes are on. And I'm positive, obviously, you have the bodies like the Department of Homeland Security and, NERC and lots of different bodies paying attention and making sure that this is certainly a protected space.
And there are two elements to that, aren't there? There is, as you've pointed out, the fact that we're all working from strange locations. You know, we're working from home. We're not used to doing that. So there's the vulnerabilities that that automatically brings because we're in a strange environment. And then there is the increased workload on, as you rightly point out, the security specialists who are sitting in their operations centers, scanning networks, trying to make sure that bad guys don't get a foothold. And certainly, you know, in Europe, we've seen ransomware attacks on hospitals. You know, that's clearly not the sort of thing that we want to see a lot of at the moment. But looking at those two constituent parts, so the security guys, let's start with them, who are really monitoring these networks. We talk a lot about skill shortage. One of the things that I think the pandemic has really shone a light on is the fact that clearly, like everybody else, some security people will be falling ill, or they'll be needing to self-isolate. What is it you think that these large utilities organizations are able to do to plug some of that skill shortage gap at the moment?
Well, I think that it's one of those things that it's an over period of time, right? Right now we're in a crisis, and right now this shortage, which has gone on for years and something that I think the industry has noticed for years, is only something that I think is spotlighted right now because of the urgent need of these, you know, IT professionals. But I think certainly skill sets, and I talked about in the beginning, you know, the more of a focus on operations technology, and skill sets for that particular portion of the industry are scarce, and ongoing learning must be part of any long-run security solution. You know, I think that as attackers become more skilled, and defenders in the same way need to keep up just as much, and organizations need to be planning for reality. And so unfortunately, we're in the right now, but they need to be focused on the tomorrow, right? They need to be finding people, and if they can't, training in-house expertise, you know, offering to put them through additional training programs, hiring new employees, and anticipating contracting needs if that's the case. But certainly, I think that organizations as a whole need to be beefing up and bulking up on their operations technology security, certainly. I also think that solutions generally need to account for the interconnected nature. I mentioned again, there's this convergence now. You know, information technology and operational technology used to be separate, but now there's this convergence because I think everyone realizes that it's so interconnected, and that's really where the bulk of the vulnerability is. And so complexity touches every aspect of cybersecurity. So people and organizations need to be really accounting for, you know, their OT and IT security, making sure that they're aligned to work together. And more than anything, I think that executive support is necessary and is needed. You know, certainly a CEO of an organization needs to be in constant contact with the CISO or the chief information security officer and asking them about their training, asking them about who they have on the bench, who they have, because then also because there's such a scarcity, people are literally plucking, people are walking, they can leave any day and go get any other job, right? So you want to make sure that you are well aware of what your team looks like and their commitment to be there, and that they understand, you know, that there's a path to elevation, because those types of things are really important. I think generally too, addressing a cybersecurity requires expertise from control engineers and security specialists, and those people need to work together. And so where these skills are lacking, I think organizations may be unable to correctly evaluate solutions. They need to figure out how they can figure out these missed opportunities. It's going to be, I think, a combination of, you know, the career fair and the starting in, you know, the college fairs, and really getting people and building them from the ground up. But also, like I said, looking at your existing team and trying to figure out who has a piece of what we need and how can we build upon that? Because as you mentioned, the scarcity is just a very real issue in the space, and it's not one that's getting any better, particularly as there's more and more vulnerability, which generally as time goes on and technology deepens and gets more sophisticated, this is an issue that you need even more people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you make some very interesting points there. I'm just sitting here reflecting, you know, that there may be people listening to this from HR departments, senior executives. You know, I'm sure that one of the things that they may have overlooked is this issue of mobility. I mean, the natural reaction, I think, for a lot of people during this kind of crisis, particularly when we see, you know, unemployment figures, you know, over 6 million, for instance, in the United States and elsewhere as well, hitting levels that we've never seen before. The assumption, perhaps, wrongly, I think, that people take away from that is that people potentially in security, you know, are going to try to hold on to their jobs. And actually, this is a moment when I think we're starting to see an increase in potential mobility, because everybody, as you rightly point out, is crying out for these skills. So really a need to focus as well in terms of how we can provide future career paths for our people to keep them within our organizations. And you mentioned as well colleges and obviously slightly longer term looking at the next generation of talent. Where do you see the next generation of talent emerging from? I mean, is it going to be from as far back, or is, you know, are we going to wait right until we've got people coming out of colleges, or is there a way in which we can fast track it, do you think?
I think, again, it's a combination. I think certainly there's thinking of the right now and there's thinking of the tomorrow. And I think that we're in such a critical point with such a high scarcity during such a vulnerable time that you have to do both. So as far as the right now, I think it's looking at your bench, your current bench, and saying, what are the skills that we have? Where are the gaps? I think there needs to be a gap analysis done and figure out what skill set is missing and how can we provide them the training to become the people that we need to currently, you know, work on this, this issue. I think the looking for the tomorrow is definitely and absolutely. I think that that's why there's a gap, because no one has been, you know, pulling these people right out of college and providing them with these jobs and training and then putting them in the position. I think there's been kind of this expectation. And remember, this is kind of a newer thing, right? So technology hasn't always been, I mean, cybersecurity, it's not always been this big, sexy, exciting thing. Like, this has just become in recent years, over the last, I would say, 5 to 7 years, really it's become this, you know, fascinating industry and subject matter. And so because of that, I think people just were not prepared and they didn't know what skills that they need, right? I mentioned, you know, network specialists and security specialists and control engineers, and you have those people, but they don't necessarily have the specific skills needed to address cybersecurity issues. So absolutely, it's going to be getting those people right out of college, finding those specific programs. There are now programs that tailor, you know, to cybersecurity, and finding those people and hiring those people immediately after college and then giving them the additional training to learn the business. So I think it's a merger of preparing for tomorrow and covering, you know, yourself today.
And if we stick with today, I said that I saw there were these two vulnerabilities, obviously on the security industry side, but also on the home working side. We do have vast populations that are working in environments they haven't worked in before. Any particular tips that you could provide for people who might be listening to this, who are working from home for something like the first time, and perhaps they're not used to, perhaps they're not set up properly to do that? You know, they've got children, they've got pets, maybe they've got partners around the place. Any sort of particular tips that you could offer?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's extremely important, and we call it practicing good cyber hygiene. But in a way to do that is you want to be aware of your virtual and your, you know, cyber surroundings. So when you're on email, you have to be extra diligent, you know, have an extra eye out and use a heightened sense of judgment and err on the side of, if you don't know, don't trust it. You know, just a matter of getting an email and paying attention to the domain. You know, if something, if you know that your firm is .com and you see something come in from a .net, you need to pay attention to those types of things. It's just very simple things like this that, you know, could really be a huge issue from a cyber perspective. It's also paying attention to emails you get directing you to do things. If you don't normally receive an email from your boss or from your CEO or from an executive saying, hey, you know, I need you to sign off on this wire transfer, you know, that's a red flag. Just paying extra attention, going above and beyond to look at the detail. Also, you know, being at home, being very careful not to insert jump drives or USB drives into, you know, your devices that are not meant for that. If you have work devices, probably keeping those things separate, not, you know, inserting those types of USB drives into your computer. You know, certainly those types of things. And it just, if everybody just took just an extra 15 seconds every time, you know, they get an email, to just look at the addresses from the recipient and make sure that it lines up and it matches the person that it is from, or that you're paying extra special attention in the requests that are coming, you know, in your email, and not clicking on phishing and scamming emails. You know, you're getting the email saying, hey, click on this, you know, and you can get this. Again, just err on the side of being cautious and not opening it. It's just better to do that than to open it and have a catastrophic event. So it's really more about being, you know, more diligent, having a heightened level of awareness.
Some great advice there and tips. So thank you for that. Let's shift things up a bit. Let's take ourselves to a time when the pandemic is over and we're returning to some semblance of normal, whatever that will look like. What do you think some of the key learnings that we will take into that future state will be from the situation that we currently find ourselves in?
I think then we're going to probably have a greater visibility into our systems. I mean, I think that that's something that's certainly needed. And essentially, you know, in order to protect what you have, you need to know what you have. And so visibility into the current status of your equipment and systems, that does help recognize attacks. It helps mitigate damage, and it certainly helps to recover quickly in the event you are actually, you know, penetrated and attacked. Respondents, you know, generally, when you talk to cybersecurity professionals, they generally will say that a lack of visibility is a major pain point in their security work. So I think that a lot of people are seeing it now. Again, no one could, who could have expected this, right? This almost, I think they're saying 75% shift to remote work and to telecommuting. No one could have anticipated this happening, you know, in the very early stages of 2020. And so really a lot of people, they didn't have this deep visibility into their system. So I certainly think that after this is over, after we kind of are on the other side of it and we're back to our normal day-to-day, I certainly believe that executives, specifically our, you know, chief information security officers and maybe chief technology officers, will be taking a good look into, you know, what is their system, what is it made of, and how can they support it? And what is it that they need in an event where, let's say, 90% of your company does go remote? Can you provide, you have the protection, are you protected, essentially? So I think that's one of the biggest things, certainly. I think something else too, and this is, again, this has been an ongoing issue, and we've talked about it quite a bit, but again, going back to like the scarcity of the workforce in cybersecurity, I think that generally every company is going to ensure that they have the people in place who can provide them with consistent, not just in an emergency, not just in a crisis, but consistent management of their system, who are aware of it, who are skilled and who know, you know, what to look for and essentially, you know, to plan for realities such as this. So I think that's something else. Those are two, I think, main things that will be really, the organizations will be focused on.
It is something of a unique opportunity, isn't it, for the industry to learn from a situation that many actually could never have anticipated and certainly wouldn't have really role played or indeed put into a playbook. Sherina, it's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time. Some really useful insights there and some great tips as well. So thank you very much indeed.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That concludes today's episode with Steve Durbin of the ISF and energy professional Sherina Edwards. We'll be back soon with another discussion from the ISF. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this podcast, please share it in your networks and be sure to visit securityforum.org to join the conversation on our LinkedIn group, to access the show notes, and to download ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance around security best practices. Wishing you, your loved ones, and your communities peace, good health, and safety during this difficult time. Till next episode, thanks for listening.